Greetings and welcome to As You Wish Talk Radio. Don't change the dial. James Gilliland hasn't had a voice change or a female Pleiadian walk-in. He's actually presenting this weekend at the Interplanetary Cultural Exchange Conference that ends tomorrow, Sunday, August 23rd, in Mount Shasta. So this is Ashley from ESETI, sitting in the host chair for James, who'll be back next week. I'm excited to be here and just a touch nervous, so I appreciate all you out there listening to hold some space and some light for me. Speaking of holding space and light, we'd really appreciate you sending some powerful intention towards ESETI. We're safe, but Mount Adams has a forest fire going on. It's not threatening the ranch. It is burning up wood and trees that were infected by a beetle infestation a few years ago. But there are about 23,000 acres burning, and we give thanks to the fire men and women and all those that are keeping the land safe. We've been giving thanks to the fire, asking it to do what it needs to do to regenerate Mother Earth, and to the winds for keeping the smoke away from the ranch. So again, we ask for your thoughts and your prayers. Before we get to our very special guest tonight, I'd like to mention what's happening for the remainder of the season here at ESETI. In addition to the Skywatch weekends, we have four more gatherings taking place before things wind down at the end of the season. Coming up Labor Day weekend, we're really excited to welcome Winston Shrout from Solutions in Commerce. He'll be presenting his Removing Commercial Karma workshop. For many of you that are interested in getting out of the fiat currency system, Winston has a ton of expertise and a lot of truth, and he'll be sharing that Labor Day weekend at the ranch. Coming up September 25th to 27th, my guest tonight, Randy Kramer, a dear friend of mine and of ESETI's, will be presenting his Psionic Boot Camp, an amazing workshop that we'll be talking a little bit more about tonight. In early October, October 9th to 11th, James will be co-presenting with Tashina, Self-Mastery and Making Contact. That registration will be up, I promise, by the 1st of September. I'm just waiting for their final write-up. And we will be building a galactic medicine wheel during that workshop. We'll talk more about that later. And then to close out the season, the weekend that is known in North America as Thanksgiving, we'll be having a gratitude gathering here at the ranch, and there'll be more information going out about that in the coming weeks. But right now, we're all about Randy Kramer. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce, as I said, a dear friend of mine and of ESETI's, Randy Kramer, who was first introduced to us by Laura Eisenhower, well, I guess maybe a little over a year ago. It kind of seems like we've known Randy forever. He's just part of the ESETI family. He's been on the program with James several times, and his information is always well received by you, our listeners. He always leaves everybody wanting to know more. And Randy was a featured presenter at this year's ESETI 2015 conference in July. This is most well known for all the information he has shared regarding his interstellar experiences with the Earth Defense Force. His experience is actually living on Mars and his truth about the Mars colony. He continues to be part of the U.S. Marine Corps Special Section that was originally created by President Eisenhower to oversee the Black Ops of MJ-12. His mission is constantly evolving, and we'll talk a bit more about what he's doing tonight. The thing that struck me most, Randy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Ashley. It's great to be here.
It's always a pleasure to connect with you. I think, Randy, one of the things that struck me the most about you when I finally had the pleasure of meeting you in person, we had talked so many times before that, was in addition to all your wisdom and your warrior, is how huge your heart is. And I just want to acknowledge how huge your heart is and what a gift it is to know you.
Oh, thanks, Ashley. You also have the biggest of hearts. So it was easy when I was up there to have a big, full heart because everyone was really just absolutely the bestest, most giving, most caretaking. I must have had no fewer than five or six surrogate mothers who were really making sure that I was fed and rested, and, you know, it was really just pretty wonderful to just have that many people giving me that much love in itself. So it was easy to give that back. So can't take all the credit. Can't take all the credit there.
Well, I'm laughing because you also told us to back off being so motherly. Lovingly, you told us that. So what was your impression of East Betty having been here for the first time? What would you like to share about your experience this year?
It was fabulous. It was a really wonderful experience. And like I already just said, absolutely everybody was absolutely wonderful and loving and caretaking. And I may have just said, hey, everyone, I'm good. I didn't necessarily need nine mothers, but it was still really reassuring to know that many people cared. Really, it really was. But it was, first of all, it was hot.
It was very hot.
But that was like a record July. Now we know that July 2015 was the hottest month ever in history. So that's official. But I think the thing that I noticed the most was the absolute bevy of activity. And when I say that, I mean looking up into the sky for the sky watches, it was super clear. Just what a busy, busy traffic sky you guys have right overhead there. Just the ability to see constant back and forth and back and forth. And the engagement, the communication engagement, people flashing their lights and getting the ships to power up and flash their lights back and so forth, which is, you know, the basic communication. I'm going to flash my light at you, and then I'll flash my light back at you. That's super basic communication, and it's super essential at this point, and it was really amazing to see. And I... was maybe the most impressed when I finally got to, see the night vision optics and the infrared lamp, where then you've really seen this intense amount of orb activity, which having a lot of people talk about is interesting. But as a trained observer, I really had been dying to get a good look at these things, you know, because I don't think the photographs that I've seen nearly capture it. Listening to a lot of different people describe what they see, like, okay, that's interesting, but I really want to see these things for myself. And so getting a super up-close look, and what I would say is just one of the most traffic-ridden fields, you know, anywhere of these sort of, you know, balls of light flying back and forth and back and forth and front and back in crazy directions and all speeds. And being able to track them, and because you're getting a good reflection of them off with this infrared lamp, you know, as a trained observer, that you're getting a heat signature, that this is not just like a particle floating through there. This is something generating heat. This is a living organism. The fact that they're moving with obvious intelligent flight back and forth against the wind direction, up, down, left, right, and in directions that can only be considered, you know, intelligent flight. So you're recognizing that something that has a heat signature has intelligent flight. And then as I started getting my eyes to adjust and was really tracking them, noticing the inside the balls of light, which the ball of light itself is really just sort of the signature of light and heat that you're seeing, the different shapes and forms that you start to see inside them. So when we talk about orb activity, what you're really talking about is seeing just the very, very basic energy ball around a living organism that's sort of in that size, realm, dimensional frequency, wherever. But what they actually are really varied as far as geometric shapes and what certainly have all the appearances of little beings with arms and legs and a head and maybe even fairy wings, which is a pretty interesting thing for a trained observer military pilot to say, I have to say. I mean, but being that I was in an incredibly sound, grounded, sober state of mind and observing this with the proper optics and the proper lamp to get a good look at them for a significant amount of time, I can say that maybe one of the most amazing things that I got to do was just observe that up close in a way that I had never been able to before, and be able to assess that in a way that makes me understand that whole puzzle piece a little bit better as a phenomenon. So it was truly fascinating and a wonderful opportunity. I'm glad I got to do it.
I think that for me, what the orbs always remind me of is in Men in Black,
right.
the little marble
right.
or ball was on the animal's necklace or a choker, right? That had the entire world within it. So although they may seem small in front of us, the question is really, if they're magnetized light beings and they've compacted to come into this realm, just because they look small in front of you doesn't mean the being inside is small by any means.
Absolutely. It's definitely, and it's certainly possible that it could be a holographic virtual form of traveling and form mm-hmm. of projecting. So they could be here and not here at the same time in a very real way. So what you may be seeing is not, in fact, the actual physiological being, but a holographic projection of the being from another location. Totally is a possibility. Now, I would have to assess a lot more data to be able to say, you know, what is and what isn't about that. But I would even imagine that you wouldn't find that it's this or that. You'd find that it's this and this and this and this. You know, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
By that? You'd find that there would be many answers to exactly what's going on there, I think. Just the sheer traffic, though, in itself is tells you that something's really happening at that place and at that moment, because you can't keep an eye on all of them at once as they go by in so many different directions, left, right, up, down, into the ground, above. So it is such a high traffic zone that there's something really active and interesting going on in that specific location, for sure.
Absolutely.
Very fast.
And I also want to give thanks to you and your team or your crew that were above us in the craft. I don't know how much. I have to let the listeners know that because of Randy's role still with the U.S. Marine Corps Special Section, there's certain things he can elaborate on and certain things he can't. So I'm going to give him that out right now in case I ask him a question that may be on what his scope of it he can talk about publicly. But can you say anything about the craft that was above that was working with you, if that's the right way to put it?
Really just that it was considered a event that was that seemed like a good idea to have a vehicle above head sort of keeping an eye on everything in case there were shenanigans, which I mean I didn't count the number of times that we had super low, you know, numberless helicopters fly over, but it was more than I could count on my fingers and toes. So it was definitely a lot of activity that made it certainly enough of everyone else's presence that my people felt that it was a sane and sober thing to have a presence as well. So that's all I really need or would want to say about that. They were there, and it was lovely to have them, and I felt very secure and glad to know that when my brigadier told me a while back, he said, no, we'll have your back, that wasn't just, shenanigans talk. The commander of the vehicle of the ship was one of the newer TR-3Bs, which is, I believe, called the Galactic Freedom class. It's very shiny. It's very shiny, very new looking, and has all kinds of, you know, really shiny new advanced parts on the inside. But I had asked the commander if maybe, you know, they could come down and give everybody a little, an unblink and say hello or not. And basically said, well, you know, I don't think that I could get approval to do that, but I'll think about whether or not I want to get yelled at for you. And I actually was off somewhere else because, lo and surprise, someone had wanted to ask me a question and had me in a conversation on the other side of the building there on the ranch. But Michael Elijon, who was there at the Skywatch, said he saw them come down and pop out and appear and power up and then leave super quick, and a few other people actually got to see them. So he did actually get to say hello, which was nice. I'm just sorry, I didn't see him, but apparently other people.
A quick flash and they were gone.
And again,
we want to express our gratitude to them for being here. For obviously they had your back, and it also had the back of Isetti, which we were incredibly grateful for.
You're very welcome.
You know, your presentation was incredibly well received. You did both your presentation during the conference and the Monday workshop, and your title of that was Psionic Self-Defense Military Psionic Protocols, The Laws of Psionics and You. And as I was getting ready to put on the website the registration for the weekend coming up that we'll talk more about, September 25th to 27th, I looked up the definition of psionic, and I laughed because it has that word in it that you hate. And the dictionary definition of psionic is relating to or denoting the practical use of swear word psychic powers or paranormal phenomena. Psionic communication. So how would you describe psionic?
Well, it's because there are laws of physics that govern it, it is a force. It's a physical force, in the sense that gravity is a physical force, and the strong force is a physical force, the weak force is a physical force, electromagnetism is a physical force. Psionics is also a physical force in that sense. It's governed by laws and mathematics and physics. So, and since the first law of psionics is pretty simple to state that all thought produces psionic energy, where thought is the cause and psionic energy is the effect. That pretty much sums it up right there. And I realize that seems pretty simple and straightforward because it is. It's, not rocket surgery. But there is also, because of our military apparatus and research and the tools and people that we've had the opportunity to work with over decades, gives us the edge of having an understanding of what the laws of psionics are and having an understanding of what some of these incredibly interesting measuring tools for measuring psionic output and so forth. So many of these things we do not have as civilians, but they're not that complicated and they're not that far away. And as I've indicated, given some time and some modest resources, we should be able to construct a psionic laboratory and some basic instruments that can register psionic outputs in order to demonstrate how the laws work and, put the science out there, publish a physics paper on the subject that's, peer-reviewed, et cetera, et cetera. So actually, it's actually physics. Terminology just being what it is, people can call projected mental energy whatever they want to call it, but we kind of feel that, just using the word psychic is an old school word and also has a connotation of people who just, read palms for $20 and tell you that you're going to meet someone, go on a trip, and get a new job, no matter who you go see. So it's just a matter of seriously making a distinct connotation between and I love my woo-woo friends when I say this. I hope they don't take this the wrong way. The difference between a woo-woo thing and a scientific theorem, set of laws and mathematics that govern something. So I just want to make sure that we're bringing that to the conversation and that people really understand that that's one of the main points of having this conversation, is so we could make a little bit of a leap from saying, well, we know this works, because as I was talking about the difference between laboratory psionics and psionics in a field, laboratory psionics are really specific, take of some very specific conditions, because background pollution and sort of can mess everything up. So you have to have a Faraday cage and some, pretty isolated environment, some pretty delicate instruments. But practical use is psionics in a field, and everybody does that. We're a psionically emergent species, as I mentioned in my talk. So everyone does a certain amount of psionics in a field, and so being able to understand the principles that make that happen, the principles that govern your brain waves and your mastery of those brain waves, which also govern a lot of your psionic output and your ability to master psionic ability, that those basic fundamental skills are science, they're physics, they're teachable, and they're replicatable, and people can learn how to do them and learn to do applicable things. And that's sort of a separate conversation, even though they're the same topic, than the lecture on sort of the laws of psionics and psionics in a laboratory. So it was nice to be able to have both of those conversations and do both of those things, because it's super important, I think, that people understand both aspects, that there's just some laws of physics here and some conversation that makes it, sciencey. And then when you want to talk about practical applications, psionic self-defense, military psionic protocol, for instance, then it's about just basically understanding what the fundamentals of how your mind works, how your brain waves work, how you tell your brain waves what you want them to do to get the right effects that you want, and then how, like anything, practice is what will get you to a better state of psionic development. And as I also said in my talk, what we're really shooting for is to get more people on the path of developing themselves, developing their psionic abilities, because we are a psionically emergent species. And when we go from being a psionically emergent species to a psionic species, there's a whole level of personal, global, socioeconomic, communal evolution that we can sort of do, because we will all sort of be on a... And it's not, and becoming a psionically a psionic species doesn't mean, you know, like any kind of ascending to another dimension or anything. It really just means a whole nother level of awareness about our own psionic ability in this dimension that we live in right now, and how that would change our reality in a way that we can sure talk a lot about, but is really not something we'll really be able to understand until it happens. But it would change the world we live in such a way that we would just... The compass of truth would always be pointing, because when you have go from psionic emergence to psionic, people can't lie to each other anymore. You just know people are lying. No, you're lying. You got a whole other thing. I mean, you just know.
Exactly.
And when every single person could call every other single person in the world on their lies, I mean, you would just have this, there would be a transition point where a lot of people would be going, no, no, I'm totally not lying. But it would only go so long before everyone would just have to adapt to a state of where, okay, we just have to live where we're telling each other the truth more, and that changes our world. It just changes the world we live in.
Absolutely. And I think, as you said, that was one of the things that the attendees at your lecture and at the workshop appreciated. I think the background of the science behind it, and then the practical experience, especially of the psionic helmet, which was kind of a taste of the tease, if you will, of what you walked people through, that exercise, that meditation. I have to say, for a good day and a half afterwards, although I do a lot of shielding, that was probably some of the clearest I've ever been. And with all that's out there at so many levels, from the powers that were, and just from the chatter, whether it's Wi-Fi or television or radio, that I see is a very powerful transition between where we are now and going to the psionic civilization. Like you say, there is this progression, especially for those out there that are sensitive, and you spoke to many of them in all that beautiful one-on-one conversations you had, but people that are feeling that they're being interfered with or having astral, conversations coming into their dream time. Would you also talk a little bit more about that psionic helmet and that kind of practical, if you will, stage between where we are now and where we are going to as the psionic emergent society?
Yeah, absolutely. That is essentially the most fundamental aspect to understand about psionics is... the most fundamental behavior, which is having this basic shielding around your head. And essentially what we did when we wrote our psionic manual was to speak with and look at the information provided to us about psionic species, and basically having a very simple conversation with, well, how do you teach this in your culture? What do you do when you're teaching, you know, your children how to go from being, I'm psionic, but I have no idea what to do, to having a simple state of understanding about who and what they are and how they master themselves and their abilities? Because essentially, that's how it works. In every other psionic culture in the galaxy, you would learn, if that's where you lived, you would learn this when you were a toddler. You know, your parents would teach you and you would learn in school. And so by the time you were 9, the equivalent, let's just call it, since time and days and years could be all different, but by the time you're a young adolescent of 9 or 10, this would be a second nature thing that you wouldn't even have to think about anymore, which is this energy sort of quantum thinking plasma that occurs around your head that acts in sort of two functions, which is to keep the chaos out, because when you become psionically aware, you can hear mentally, mm-hmm. even the thoughts and psionically, all kinds of things. And we have mental hospitals and clinics full of people who are hearing things and thinking that they're losing their minds because their psionic emergence is hearing people's thoughts in all directions. And it can be a really maddening experience for people who are really, really experiencing that opening up. And if you were a toddler in a psionic world, you would learn how to wear this helmet, which kind of dampens that and keeps it out. Then it's stuff you can pick out when you want it to, and not just something bombarding your head by having the thing to protect you. But as well as protecting you, then it becomes this also this amplification, housing, programmable space for all this other sort of mental and psionic activity that you'll perform in your life, that you start very young learning just basic fundamentals of mental communication and mental information gathering and learning through sort of, you know, your own psionic development and how you psionically reach out to a thing or an object or a person or a place to, you know, to remote view it, to learn about it. Communication, self-healing, healing of others, plus, you know, the basic technologies, plus the more complicated technologies, moving matter, altering matter, transmuting energy and matter, and so forth. So essentially, that's just a basic elementary tool, set of tools, that depending on where you would be born in the universe, you would have some kind of cultural way in which that would be taught to you at a very, very young age. So when we did the psionic manual, we just said, well, let's just do this very, very basic breakdown of these basic fundamental skills that other psionic cultures teach babies. So it is laughable in some ways as it is. The military psionic protocol is really, a primer, you know, like a psionic baby book for how you be a psionic person, how you be a psionic adult. And that involves a lot of understanding who you are, how you defend yourself from things that can come in, and how you can sort of project back. And then we mix it up and start learning how to defend and attack in much more adult-like ways. And then that becomes more fun. But it's basic technology, basic technology. And we just tried to break it down. And then now I'm fortunate enough to be able to translate that and teach that in its simplistic form, which is just the fundamentals of how to go from being a psionic toddler to a psionic adolescent.
Regardless of your age.
Regardless of your age or your species. Yep, exactly.
Speaking of species, I'm sure there's some people out there who are wondering, who are some of these other galactic cultures you met with? And just to humor that, can you mention a couple that you may have met with that are psionic?
Well, you know, it's too many to just go through like a list, and language and translating is also sometimes difficult. So when you meet someone or mm-hmm. meet someone from another world and they tell you who they are, that doesn't necessarily translate to a star
label, right.
I could readily tell you with, or a label that you could readily identify someone with. And sometimes, you know, you're just introduced on also on a more formal level or on a more specific level, sort of their military or state position. You know, this is Mr. Director, Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't necessarily, you know, some of that information when other people are handling that is presumed. And again, I would just tag along for those informations. All I would say is that there are maybe, you know, a quarter to a third of the space-strange species who are not fully psionic, who either have some fledgling ability or really haven't figured it out at all yet. And I would say about the rest of the two-thirds of every other galactic species that I've ever encountered or heard of has enough of a psionic development that it uses that as its primary source of communication.
Mm. And can I ask where these meetings took place?
Oh, yeah, the Intergalactic Space Station around Jupiter, which I have mentioned before. It's a mm-hmm. huge, huge, huge structure with 60-foot-plus, you know, glass or some other composite windows that go all the way around in a circle, and it's this amazing view. And it's just a neutral zone meeting place that has the ability to holographically shift furniture and environments for people to be able to meet in all different shapes and sizes and breathable atmospheres. And so, I mean, it's really just an incredible way that they can accommodate people to communicate with one another. And the number of different ways that they can have to translate that can include technological psionic specialists to do the communicating, go-betweens and, you know, psionic amplifiers that you put on your head. And then, you know, between species that are not quite good enough to just communicate without them, you know, you put on the little helmet and all of a sudden you're having, you know, clear walkie-talkie communication in your head with someone psionically, which is something we'll be able to do once we do some psionic laboratory work. Building the kind of communicatory amplifiers is one of the simplest things to do and will be one of the first things we can do. So the Psionophone will be in our near future, I can say that. I can't even count sometimes the number of species that I would see in a visit there. It would be sometimes just visually and mentally confusing that would, you know, cause a headache, even because there were so many different sizes and shapes that your brain is trying to keep track of and your pattern recognition is trying to do memory, you know, checks of and identify and create visual images in your brain.
Exactly.
And the scale. So we were talking earlier about the scale of, you know, these sort of, you know, orbs and beings in the orbs in the field. That was something that was really, really, really struck home hard on that station, was the massive scale of variation between the very, very, very tall and the very, very large and the much smaller than us, the even tinier than us. So, and we're kind of on the small side. You know, we're not that big, but we're not the smallest, but we're not that large. If we really, the more time we spend out there, the more time we're going to spend, you know, cricking our necks, looking up, talking to people who are a bunch taller than us. That's just kind of the way it is. You know, let's just get used to that.
Exactly. You know, I just wanted to share with you my nephew Jordan, who you met. He was here doing your sound during the conference. And as I was driving him back to the airport to leave to go back to Northern California, and I asked him what was the most important thing he learned when he was here. And he said, it was my takeaway from Randy that I'm the only one that's in charge of how I feel and how I react to things. And to be aware of when the chatter is influencing how Jordan was interacting with things. And so that practice of the psionic helmet, which in this case is more of an energetic thing than the psionophone you're talking about, but for 22-year-old who's, you know, relatively new to this, who had been put on antidepressants and now safely got off of the antidepressants, I just want to say thank you, but also to stress that that's such a key tool that, you know, you're talking about going off on the, you know, the space station near Jupiter, et cetera. But for those that are listening, it's such an important and relatively easy to use tool that, especially as things heat up and as the powers that were get a little more desperate and try different ways of gamma rays or whatever. Do you want to address that just a little bit more and how you're going to approach that in the weekend coming up in September?
Absolutely. And the nice thing about the fundamentals is that they're not that hard. And they just take a bit of practice to get comfortable with them and to start to see and feel their impact and their effect. And then when you start to see the impact and feel the effects, then you go, oh, yeah, okay. I mean, and then your whole brain and your body and your energy being start catching up and coming along for the ride. So there's an accelerated curve on the process where the beginning can seem kind of slow, but, you know, acceleration comes with any kind of steady commitment to change your brainwave mastery and kind of talk about it specifically because most of the exercises are geared towards understanding how to master your brainwave states and then how to visualize the right things, including, you know, this bubble helmet around your head that are the basic fundamental aspects of being a psionic being. So I wasn't really sure how when we did the workshop in July, how I was going to cram everything I knew into a four-hour workshop. And how I was going to cram everything I knew into a two-hour lecture. And I managed to cram just enough into those periods of time to know that given more expansive time, I can just spend the time that I would like to spend talking about those subjects, which is being a bit more detail-oriented and repeating the fundamentals enough times that people understand the difference between the fundamentals and the nuances. Because while the nuances are important to understand as you're developing the fundamentals, it's still just really basically the main most important thing to understand what your three and four sort of fundamentals are and what your three and four sort of nuances that you're going to experience as you're going through those fundamentals and how to put people on the right track. That's really the main thing. So we're hoping to, you know, do a maybe get a good video of the whole event so we can get a video up and out and maybe put a DVD together, because there's no way that I can teach a bazillion classes on the laws of psionics and psionic self-defense. So I'm hoping to, you know, put that in a form that is simple and clear and about fundamental mastery that will be available in the near future, so that this will be as an accessible a bit of information as possible. I mean, that's absolutely our goal as the command staff of the United States Marine Corps Special Section, and my goal to disseminate that is just to get it as far and wide as possible for people to start practicing.
Absolutely. We've already confirmed Sid, who was there at the conference, so he'll be filming and the audio, so that's all set up for the weekend that you're here. And I think what you do is really well presented as well, because you do have the scientific, the knowledge, the background for those people whose left brains need to be satisfied, right?
Right.
And you need the information and need the details and need the specifics and need the science, married with the actual experiential practice, right? And so that's, I think, really the beauty of it. It's not just all lecturing from the stage, but there is a lot of that. And then it, again, gets that opportunity for people to experience. Do you want to talk a little bit about the mind? I want to say mind mapping, but for some reason that doesn't sound right. So.
Well, we just really call it what we think it is in the most simplistic terms, which is brainwave mastery, because what we learn about our heightened and elevated abilities is that they don't function best, as some people might think, when your left brain stops working and your right brain works overdrive.
Right.
That's not when you get the best psionic ability and the best psionic and most powerful manifestations. When it actually happens is with balanced left and right amplitudes and what we call awakened mind states, creative mind states, but essentially which are balanced whole-minded states and are not suffering from left and right dominance, which typically when you look at someone's brainwaves in a normal thinking state, they are just leaning one way or the other most of the time. And it shifts back and forth. You know, a single person will go back and forth between sort of mostly being on their right brain and mostly being on their left brain, depending on what they're doing, just because we tend to be kind of imbalanced about that. And when you use a device and a machine that can give you that feedback, then you can start to see what happens when you balance those sides and when you get these sort of harmonious patterns, and then you experience when you see and know that you're having those harmonious patterns, then the stuff that's happening visually and mentally inside your head that you go, oh, wow, you really know that you're waking up the inside part of your mind, then you know it's happening. And that absolutely is a whole-minded effect. And definitely, without question, to have that whole-minded effect, you have to figure out how to get everyone's left and right brains communicating. And that takes both a left-brain logical understanding in a way that for each person is like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense, and in a way that their right brain can also have a spatial experience that they can go, oh, yeah, I experienced that. And then the instant that your left brain goes, oh, yeah, that makes sense, and your right brain goes, oh, yeah, I experienced that, then bing, then you have these sort of balanced aha moments where your brain waves are balancing and you you find that you're like, oh, that's what that elevated state feels like. I've experienced that before. And then when you start to really identify the mental, visual, physiological sensations of those states, then you can really identify how to be in those states on purpose and how to get to those states on purpose and how to get away from the other states on purpose that you don't want to be in. So essentially, once you understand that everything that happens to you when you think or feel something is reflected as a brainwave state, and that when you start to see the difference between these chaotic, various chaotic brainwave states versus a balanced, harmonious brainwave state is, and how different you feel and what you can do with that, then it becomes really, again, the fundamental, basic, elementary school kind of thing to go, oh, what I want to do then is practice how to take these chaotic brainwave states and make them more harmonious, and how to be in these harmonious brainwave states at will, when I want to be. And then as you do that, you achieve brainwave mastery. And what we really consider to be brainwave mastery is not necessarily the ability to, you know, move large rocks with your mind, but it is really just quite simply the ability to tell your brainwaves where you want them to be when you want them to be there. So that when you're feeling anxious or unhealthily excited or nervous, you can change your brainwaves. If you feel too lethargic or too pooped out or too tired, you can change your brainwaves. If you're having problems sleeping, you got insomnia, you can change your brainwaves. That the ability to change your brainwaves at will is what enables you to have mastery over your mind and therefore your body. So it's just those fundamentals, and mastering those fundamentals and learning those fundamentals and talking about those fundamentals and practicing those fundamentals as far as what the practical effects and impacts are to people getting brainwave mastery, to having all of these psionic experiences and understanding your psionic ability. So what most people do is have accidental experiences or because these balanced brainwave aha moments, they do happen. They just happen. But they so often don't happen when we really on purpose want them to do, that we go, oh, aha, and we have a moment, and then, you know, we're off to some sort of unbalance again. But it might steer us in still a positive creative direction. It might get something really cool done or accomplished. But it's about understanding, feeling the difference, sensing the difference, knowing what the sensations are, what we sort of call the objective landmarks, when you go, oh, I felt and saw this, you know, in sort of my mind's eye, so I know that was happening, I know that I was having this brainwave experience. And then being able to see that in the biofeedback device totally connects those thoughts to the brain and makes the person have a whole-minded experience about it. And that is what changes perceptions and life experiences, when you can do that. So, and having seen people go through that experience in a class and having gone through that and having seen what I wasn't, honestly, I hadn't taught a group that size, so I had no idea how well the information was going to stick at all. And I was very, 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 very pleased to see that a lot of people had a really solid, sticky experience with what had happened there. So that meant I didn't do anything more brilliant than understand how to get the left brain part happening and the right brain part happening, get them to connect and get everyone to go bing and get it. Because that's what locks in the experience and the change is being able to get that whole-minded state to happen.
And that's another part of the thing with the workshop we're working on, and Randy's working on it, we're working on it here, is actually having some equipment here that will actually, during the workshop, show the brainwave state. So that's not definite yet, but that's something we're working on both sides to do that, which I think will be important for the people that are coming to the workshop, not only
feel absolutely.
It, but
I feel good that we'll be able to make that happen one way or another. And I think it does. I mean, because I could basically what I could do this last time is you know, draw the patterns. I could draw, you know, I could get up and draw the charts and explain how it works. And that still was able to, and that worked enough to connect people, you know, to be able to show them that left brain part and then have them have the experiential exercises was enough. But I think that in my experience, and when people can actually see it, especially when they can see it happening with themselves and go, oh, I do that. It's just a huge, huge, huge thing. And it's because they're invisible until you see them. You know, your brain waves are this amorphous thing that you know they're there, and people can talk about, yeah, okay, but I haven't seen them. But then when you see a device that's measuring them, and then you kind of can see them because you're seeing a measurable effect, you can go, oh, they do that. Look at that. And it really makes a connection for people. So I think it'll be fabulous in the sense that we'll be able to get a very sticky experience like that will really mentally, psionically stick. Because I think it went well. I think I practiced well enough last time that I think I know what I'm doing this time.
Well, nobody knew that you were practicing last time. So, and I think you may have already said it, but I'm just going to ask you just briefly to summarize, just from your heart, because you are very heart-based, even though you're a warrior, what your understanding that everyone that's going to be coming, who's drawn to come to this weekend workshop, Psionic Boot Camp, September 25th to 27th here at East Betty, what's your intention that they walk away with when they leave that workshop? Understanding everybody's different, but what's your intention for that, what they walk away with?
Well, now, like I said, that I've gotten a chance to experiment with the, you know, transmitting that information from me to a group of people, which, you know, saying that I was experimenting, you know, as far as the presentation last time was true, but this is also a material and topic and subject matter that is that I know like the back of my hand. I mean, I can do it in my sleep, so it's. The issue was, how do I put the right information in the right order in the right amount of time without, you know, screwing it up? That was sort of my main tricky goal that I was trying to figure out. And I just am glad that I was able to get the experience of, oh, I do know this like the back of my hand, like I thought that I did, so it's not that hard for me to figure out how to present it to a group of people in the amount of time. So in that sense, this is stuff I'm really, really well versed at. So I'm super glad to be able to finally present it to people, but not having gotten up in front of a group of people to do that before, it was a total guess on how that was going to go and how I was going to do that and whether it was going to be any kind of a successful operation. But my main goal is just going to be to make sure that the fundamentals stick, that people have their left brain experience and have their right brain experience. And I think I'm good enough at understanding the different types of people and the different ways that people think to say something enough times that, you know, the six different personality types can hear it their way. And that everyone can have at least one experiential exercise that will work for them, that they'll be able to feel and go, oh, there is a real physical phenomenon happening here and not just a woo-woo thing in my head that I can't quite feel because I'm thinking about it too hard instead of allowing my brain and my body to be it. So I think the main goal will just be to really express the fundamentals of laws of psionics and practical psionics and the practical fundamentals that really that not only anybody can practice with and learn, but should be able to walk away to teach another person the basic fundamentals, you know, in two exercises, you know, because essentially I now have got it solid enough that I can concentrate a lot of information into a single exercise now. So, you know, by being able to make a couple of exercises that will be definitely learnable and memorable and retainable, and the left and right brain and the whole-minded experience that people will walk away with, that when someone says, "Wow, what'd you learn?" You know, that should even be able to sit down and go, "Well, I could show you two things that I learned," and you'll be able to feel, experience, and think about it in a way that's practical. So I think that's that kind of minimal goal that I'm, and that doesn't mean everyone's going to learn that, but that's the minimal goal that I sort of think about when I think about what I want people to walk away with. I don't want people to just walk away and go, "Oh, that was really interesting," and then never give it another thought or action. That would be totally a waste of my time. So my goal is definitely to put the jumping bee in people's head too, because I think there's a bug, you get bit by a little bug of, ooh, this is really interesting and exciting, and my brain really likes this. Because once you start to do these exercises and you do the mental mm-hmm. focus exercise, the neurotransmitters are firing off in your brain. Your neural pathways are moving, and dopamine and serotonin are flying around in your brain. And so there really is this very natural effect of how you're balancing out your brain chemistry and feeling better about who you are and what you're doing in this very biochemical sense. Yes. And so certainly anyone who feels like they're not having balanced brain chemistry issues, I'm telling you, the simple thing is just a small regular dose of meditative or mental focus exercises that get your brain going in that direction. So I hope to sow that little bug a little bit to have people feel that enough to go, ooh, my brain really likes this. I would like to do it more often, and my brain would like it if I do it more often. So because it becomes, there's to be blatant about it, you're enough of a pleasure experience happens in your brain to this positive thing that's good for you, and it's getting people to feel good about eating carrots, so you kind of give this little experience that people go, oh yeah, and they'll feel like, yeah, that was really cool and that was really fun and I want to do more of that. And that's what I hope to kind of infect people with, is not just a sense that this is boring physics, but it's exciting physics, because it's happening in our brains and our bodies right now, and we can experience it right now, and we can do things with it right now, and we can practice it right now, and then 6 months from now, with regular practice, you might be able to have a really strong, fundamentally functional ability of any number of types of kinds. And I think that, and even sooner in some cases, I think we're dealing with a lot of acceleration in the time and place we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people who are coming to the table to this sort of thing aren't exactly all the green newbies either. So, I'm hoping to, by also teaching the fundamentals, that I think there's a lot of methods that people may have learned about meditation or, brainwave mastery that may be more complicated than it needs to be. And so hopefully I can just simplify a few things too that, people.
Exactly.
Because some methods are taught very complicated. Like, this is a very complicated thing, and it's not. It's really not. Mastering your brainwaves and understanding how they work, it's actually really simple and fundamental, because they teach it to children on other planets. And we would teach it to our children if we were on the right track there. So.
Fantastic. So for those that are listening that are interested, Randy is still kind of finalizing the actual program, but there is a description on our event website, which is privateinvitationestudy.com, private as opposed to public, invitation to the party, and then estudy.com. And on the front page, what's coming up at eStudy, you can just scroll down and see Randy's handsome face, click on it, and it'll take you to the page that describes that. We're coming up with just a few minutes left, Randy, and I did mention in the blurb, and Dawn is going to let me know how much more time we have, but we're talking about the two facets of what your current mission is in your role with your U.S. Marine Corps Special Section, and we may not have time to go too deep into it, but you were talking about the R&D and the psionic technology, but did you want to just touch on the other aspect of what you're doing now? And I know that you helped a lot of people that were here.
Yeah, I do want to mention it, because it's both very exciting work as well as I'm finding needed work, which is this very odd little niche of extraterrestrials and proxy who are acting really specifically, not in any kind of vague way, but very specifically for an extraterrestrial source, who are committing crimes, felonies, in some cases horrible, murderous crimes. And the case files that have been presented to me to tackle have turned out to be just some of the most interesting, shocking, bizarre, and horrific things that I've ever seen in my life. And so I'm kind of very excited to go after these characters, because they're doing such terrible, horrible things. And as a Marine, that makes me feel very motivated to make them stop. But my brigadier we've really taken this kind of slow as far as a long conversation about what are the specific jurisdictions and jurisprudences of the United States Marine Corps Special Code, what my specific investigative detention, arrest, and termination powers are, how, you know, that is operating as a, as an organization, the other parties that are showing up to support that, including, you know, a very, very real judge to write very, put very real names on very real arrest warrants. So, you know, the all of the elements are have come together and are still finalizing to come together to do cover this niche, which is this very odd sort of area that is not being taken up by anyone else or enforced by anyone else. It should be, which are these odd little scavenger criminals who either have, in some cases, some slightly ambitious aims for harming local communities to, in some cases, just simplistic feeding, you know, brutal sort of seen this as a very ugly kind of food source, and committing just heinous crimes in the sense of, you know, you're not supposed to come down to Earth to, you know, feed on the humans. That's not in the treaty. So, but I can tell you that local law enforcement's not equipped to deal with this. You know, the FBI's got a number of departments and a number of cases, and they're not equipped to deal with this. And none of the other agencies who seem to want to be equipped for it care to deal with it. And so I kept asking my breeder, why are you showing me these cases? Why are you giving these to me? What am I supposed to do about it? And he just kind of kept saying, well, nobody else is. So if, you know, you're legally empowered under these articles and I'm handing them to you, and if you don't deal with them, maybe they won't get dealt with. So think about it that way. And that really, like, you know, kept me up at night. And I lost sleep over that. And I was like, wow, okay, I guess, you know, somebody better do something then, because these are tangible cases where, you know, real people are dying. And not in any kind of vague way, like very specific people and very specific dates with names and faces who have been, who are perished and died and will continue to die because of these criminal suspects committing horrible murderous acts. So I'm excited that we're doing this because it needs to be done, but at the same time it has turned out to just be this very, very, you know, crazy X-Files-y thing. If someone had suggested to me, you know, that this sort of activity was going on before I had seen these cases and the information had been presented to me, and the eyewitness testimony that has been presented to me was presented to me, and the solid data and our really good, amazingly accurate remote viewers, some of the most accurate remote viewers who have helped solve criminal cases in this country, like, ever. And that team, I mean, this is not just me. There's no way just I alone could do this. I mean, the team that has formed together to make this happen and gather this information has just been amazing as they've pulled together and done this. But I'm telling you, you know, I would not have believed what someone was telling me if I had not seen this as a case file in front of me. And I could really go, oh my God, this is really something that I could never have imagined that would happen. But it looks like it is happening, and somebody better do something about it. And I guess that someone's me. So,
well, I thank you for holding that space as well. We are coming up to the top of the hour now. Randy, if people want to get in touch with you, do you want to mention your website?
Yes, I am at earthcitizenconsulting.org and at .com. That's all one word. So if you go to either the .org or the .com's link, that will get you there. And I have information. People can contact me there, my email address and so forth.
Fantastic. And before we get cut off, I just want to thank you for all that you are, all that you do, and for being my guest in my first opportunity sitting in as a fill-in host for James. James will be back at the ranch, and we'll be back on next week. So in the meantime, stay in your hearts, connect to your star family, and look up. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Ashley.
Aloha.